Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week, we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in 4 dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go. We've returned.
It's a Sunday.
It is a Sunday.
The Lord's Day.
It's the Lord's edition.
We rarely record on Sundays, but today is a special occasion.
It is.
It's also the last episode of the year.
It is the last episode of the... Whoa.
I know.
Crazy.
How has your year been, Zabel?
I'd say it has been very good.
Great.
There's been a lot of firsts. And a lot of seconds.
Okay.
And a lot of unexpected swerves. But I actually think, when I think about who I was January 1st, 2022 versus now, I'm like, yeah, I've had some fun this year. It's been a really fun year.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I love that answer.
Yeah.
Good.
I've like actually traveled a bit. Mm-hmm. I got COVID, mm-hmm. possibly twice. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of crushing, a lot of being crushed.
Yeah.
But it was like, it evens out though. So.
Sure.
Even amount of crushing and being crushed.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Let go of a lot of things.
Yeah.
And I feel like this was a big year of letting go of things.
Oh, I love that.
And now I feel much more at peace and much more like jazzed about everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
How has your 2022 been?
It's been good. You know, it was not the year I thought I'd have, in good ways and bad.
What did you think it would be?
I didn't think it would go the way that it did, in good ways and bad ways. Yeah, a lot of great things happened in my professional life, mm-hmm, in my mm-hmm. personal life, mm-hmm. in my smelly later life. Mm-hmm. Some not so great things happened that sort of threw me for a loop for a while, but that is okay. I think it was also a year of letting go for me, mm-hmm. of a few things. Also, though, like, not to be a vague cryptic bitch, I don't care, but
yeah, I was like, tell me what didn't go well.
You know what didn't go well.
Do but I
also, yeah. Also that, like, now more than ever I'm in my like let go and let God era.
Let go and let God.
I just like
Jesus take the wheel.
You know, I'm a very anxious person, but this year I'm just sort of like, I have no control over that. Literally, Jesus take the wheel. So
it's freeing, isn't it?
It is freeing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I have a very positive outlook right now. Things are great. I'm very happy. I feel like I'm very invested in things that are like invested in me. And yeah I think 2023 is going to be a really kooky great year.
I'm very optimistic about the future in general, question mark, but I think like RE, letting things go. I used to think that this was like, and it is like a little bit of toxic positivity when everyone's like, you can choose to be happy, just choose happiness. And I'm like, that's easy for people with, you know, not depression to say, or like not chemical imbalances, whatever. I'm not a doctor, and not that I think I have chemical imbalances. I don't think I do, but like, to a certain extent, I think that is true. I think somebody told me, just aim for 51% happy and the rest will sort itself out. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's very manageable.
Yeah.
That's a very manageable attitude to have. And I like that. And I realize that the more that I'm just not going to let dumb shit I have no control over invade my mind or overthink it, I'm like, wait, good things happen when I'm in a better mood, weirdly.
Yeah.
It's like good things beget good things, question, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, being in a open-minded state of mind has led to very good things for me this year.
I like that. I do think that you sort of, now I'm getting Instagram girl about it, but like, you know, attract the energy that you put out.
No, it's like really weird though how that has actually happened for me this year. It's like spooky. Mm-hmm. And all of the times that I've been feeling like, what's that fucking potion in Harry Potter when Harry gives his friend Ron this like lucky potion, but it like wasn't it. It's and it was
Felix
just like a
plus.
Yeah. Felix Felatio. Like what is that?
Felix Felatio. Ah!
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. That one. But it's like the placebo effect. And if you can placebo affect your mind into thinking that, like, strangely, it has attracted other good things and other good energy things. I don't know. I'm like on the fence of woo-woo-ness, but I do believe that energy is very effective and does impact the way you move about the world, or at least for me. So like tapping into that, I'm just like, all right, don't be a total cunt and things will happen to you.
That's our next merch drop.
Yeah.
I think like, I don't know what I'm trying to, I'm going to edit this out, but like letting go of chaotic things that were not making me feel good.
Yeah.
Has done me some good. I don't fucking know. Anyway, this is the weirdest intro, and that's really saying something for us.
I feel like this is the last week of December spiral that like everybody goes through.
I am in my like end of the year spiral, and it's not a negative spiral for once, but I on the way here I was like, again, it's a sort of just melancholic, like, I love the end of the year. I love New Year's Eve.
Really?
Oh yes, it's so
I find it stressful.
No, it's so romantic. I love the end of the year. Oh my god, I say this all the time. Mm-hmm. But the week between Christmas and New Year's is like one giant weekend crammed between two weekends.
It is,
and everyone goes crazy, and I wish it was in Madison for it, because then it really goes crazy. But I love it. It's just so much fun, and it's so like kooky.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I'm not doing anything crazy this year. I'm fucking working the entire time. But
I never do anything for New Year's, really. And I'm like, I kind of want to, but it also just, it feels like there's so much pressure. It's like,
yep,
the biggest night of FOMO year. Yep. So I'm like immediately like, ugh, like this is like too much to deal with.
Well, and it's amateur hour too. It's the people that like don't really go out, go out really hard on New Year's Eve, and that's the problem.
Oh, you're totally right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's that, it's Halloween, mm-hmm, and it's St. Patrick's Day. Ugh. Stay home. Ugh.
St. Patrick's Day is not a holiday I recognize.
Literally. Imagine. Yeah, anyway, all I want to do on New Year's Eve is take a really long walk around New York City and then like get drunk at night.
Yeah.
At an apartment. I don't want to be out.
What do I want? I don't know. It'd be nice to like make out with someone hot. That's it.
That's any day.
One day, my own personal lifetime movie will happen.
Speaking of, I mean, not so much speaking of making out with hot people, but you know how you told me that, and I think you said it on the air, that we were talking about fucking sticks and holes. how you went to that billiards place in the East Village for a day. I went there last night.
Oh, you did?
Because of you.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What did you do? Who'd you go with?
I played pool. You know who I went with.
Okay. Was it cute?
Yeah.
Did he like it?
Yes.
That's so cute.
I mean,
because like it's a little bit of like a sports vibe, bar kind of vibe.
It's
so
that,
yeah, the corona was a little iffy.
That I had questions about.
Yeah.
But it was great. We, like I told you before we started, we had dinner at this new place in Midtown. Mm-hmm. But we had a couple hours to kill, and I was like, Sable played billiards a while ago. Like, we should do that. And he's like, yeah. We had so much fun. Oh my God.
Oh, that's so great.
It was great.
I love that. Yeah. Hooray.
Shout out to you.
Everyone steal that date idea.
Yes.
It did cross my mind. I wondered, like, I wonder if he brings all the girls here.
I would not bring a first date there specifically. I would play pool, but like you said,
the vibe,
the energy
weird.
Was like oppressively heterosexual.
Yes.
And I was almost to a point of like, everyone here is white.
Everyone there was white, but I went on like a Saturday afternoon and it was kind of chill. It wasn't that crowded. It was like a rainy day too. I think if you go on a night, mm-hmm, on a night, in the night, it's different energy.
This was early evening.
Yeah.
So every table was full, but it wasn't like crazy packed.
Yeah. I think it's like a good afternoon day date. It's a good day date, mm-hmm, idea. There are a couple billiards places, I think, around me in Williamsburg, but they're like weirdly expensive.
Yeah.
And there's like three tables.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
I'd feel too like observed.
Sure.
Like I want to be like lost and just like amazed.
There were so many tables.
So many.
That was like, it gave you anonymity and like
it did.
No one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm like, don't watch me do this.
Break, please. Humiliating.
It's so, I cannot break. I'm so weak. I have no upper body strength. Like this is not for that. That's not why we're here.
Can I say, We played four rounds of pool.
Oh, wow.
And I won them all.
Ooh, period. Okay. Are you a sore winner?
I don't care. I'm the least competitive person
you'll ever meet. Same. Completely, me too.
My mom was always like, we always put you in sports and you chase butterflies. And I was like, well, I don't know who you thought you were kidding putting me in t-ball.
Yeah.
Please.
I was always like picked last in gym because they're like, she does not care if she lives or dies.
Oh, completely.
Don't give a shit. Like, if there was any team effort, I was not a part of it. I don't care.
Yeah, no.
Like, I'm not diving for anything.
The only person I'm competing with is myself.
Not even that. I literally don't care about winning at all. Like, I don't understand people who are competitive because I'm like, what is at stake here?
Right.
Truly, what right. do you win? Is there money involved? Is it life or death? That's the only thing I care about.
Right, right. I love that.
I would be great on a reality competition show because I would be out the first episode.
Literally.
I would love to have that on my resume of like, was on a season of like a big reality show and was voted off the first episode.
I can't see you caring enough to get on a reality show though, you know?
No, I wouldn't. It would have to be a really, really odd casting choice. Mm-hmm. Truly. Like, the only thing I can think of is the time I was in a Dove campaign.
Oh, right.
Like 2015, it was about like breaking hair stereotypes because I was blonde at the time and they were specifically looking for a blonde Asian woman. And whoever the producers or the casting people were just Googling blonde Asian woman and they found all of my Exo Vain articles.
Oh my God.
Thank you, Exo Vain. And even then, they were like really trying to get me to do it. And I was like, is this a scam? Like, right. I think you're scamming me. And they were like, just send in like a little video you take on your phone of like talking about your hair journey. And they were like, yeah, the producers like really want to cast you for this. I was still just like, who are you people? Is this a scam? Will you kidnap me to Brazil?
Well, here you are.
And there I am.
And you got paid.
And I got paid.
There you go.
Yeah. And a free trip to Brazil, which was sick.
I love that.
Yeah. But I would love to be on Love Island and just like tap the fuck out after the first time. Be like, none of y'all are hot. Good day.
Goodbye.
But yeah. I love that. That's what I'm going to manifest for 2023.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Cast me in a reality dating show. I think they need that energy.
They do.
I think it'd be funny.
You know, you'd be a good host.
I would love to host a dating show. Somebody recently turned me on to Naked Attraction.
Oh, you were telling me that.
It's wild.
Don't you see like dick and balls?
All of it.
Oh my God.
They literally, it's a British dating show. It's all on YouTube and like full frontal nudity. You literally choose people based on their bits. But it's like strangely like endearing. I don't know. It's weird. It's very strange, but also I'm like, whoa. The type of person who would go on a dating show where you're like, okay, you're going to be naked and someone's literally going to be saying what they like about your crotch or like your toes or your knees and or your tattoos and like pick you based on that. That's wild to me.
Were they hard or soft?
They were soft.
Okay.
I don't think you're allowed to like pitch a boner. Although I feel like you should in that context. You're like, what are you working with?
Yeah, it's respectful.
Like most people are growers, not showers.
There's nothing more ugly than a flaccid dick. Anyway.
Yeah, they're a little... They're like,
anyway. Sable.
Yes.
What do you smell like today?
Okay, I smell like, again, in honor of our episode with Lush, I am wearing Lush Lust.
Ooh.
And
this is the red one?
Yeah.
Okay.
TBH. I was not super familiar with Lush's fine fragrances until recently. They sent me a couple. Lust was one of the first ones they sent me. And it is just like,
oh,
it is just like a blast of jasmine, like
yeah.
super dank jasmine. Mm-hmm. I mean, dank respectfully. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. And again, I'm not a floral person, but I like when florals are done interestingly. And I think this is really interesting. It's just a super saturated, glossy, lacquered jasmine. Mm. That's very, I wouldn't even almost call it like feminine TM. It's almost animalic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But without the spice, without the gourmand, uh-huh. it's just like a blast of jasmine nectar.
Yes.
It reminds me of Poison Ivy. Like, this is something Poison Ivy would wear.
Completely.
And then, you know, kiss you and you die of poison. But like, yeah. And I get why they called it Lust. I don't know why jasmine has like such a slutty reputation, but it does. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Anyway, this is just, I don't know. I smell like a really fresh, vivid, glossy jasmine plant. I love it. It's just very textural.
Yeah.
And it's nice.
It's like gleaming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just such a bright, gleamy jasmine.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. I just think as someone like me who like isn't necessarily drawn to florals, yeah. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's so green and like textural.
Mm. It's beautiful.
It's lovely. Yeah. Yeah. Tynan, what do you smell like today?
So like you, in honor of our episode, I am wearing a Lush fragrance. And it's my very favorite Lush fragrance of all time. Mm-hmm. It is called Rentless. Unfortunately, I
Rentless?
Believe...
Rentless?
Rentless.
Like without rent. Like yeah. can't pay the rent.
Yes.
Got it.
So it's... Unfortunately, it is discontinued. So tracking down the product page is not easy. I believe it has something to do with like always having a home and not being nomadic. I could be completely wrong, but from okay. what I gathered...
Interesting.
That's what I'm getting. Rentless, I got... So this dropped in 2016, and I believe it was part of their core up until recently. This is such a beautiful but weird fragrance, and I say weird because the build of it makes no sense for how it smells. To me, it's like... I can't even place it. It's like really bright, but caramelly and ambery and sticky and warm. But, God, it's like buoyant... but heavy at the same time. It's hard for me to describe, and I've been wearing it for, 5 years now, and it hasn't gotten any easier. But I'm so drawn to it. I love it so much. I'm only telling you some of the notes because they don't make any sense with how it smells. But at the top, there's anise, grapefruit, and citrus. In the middle, there's geranium and lemon. At the base, there's labdanum, coumarin, leather, and vanilla. So... it sounds very bright and citrusy, but it's not. Mm. It's just very round and very honeyed, and it feels like, it smells like the way light shining through amber looks.
Ooh.
It's so beautiful.
A color.
And it's really warm, and I remember getting my hands on it in like July or August of what I believe was 2018. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was... summer in the Midwest. It was hotter than the devil's dick, and this was not, you know, a seasonal choice or like apt for the season if you want to go there, but I liked it so much that I couldn't stop wearing it. And by then I was writing about fragrance all the time, and I was switching my fragrances up all the time, and this I like everything came to a screeching halt, and I just like couldn't stop wearing this because it is so good. Unfortunately, it is currently discontinued. I'm hoping they bring it back. I have recently found that I don't want to call it a dupe, but something that sort of brings me to a similar place. And I hesitate to even say this because they're just as similar as they are dissimilar, mm-hmm. is Le Labo's Tonka 25. It just has this like sweet roundness to it that mm-hmm. is similar to Rentless in a way that would satisfy the itch if I had it. So yeah, I'm very obsessed with Rentless. I'm so happy that today we mm-hmm. are talking to Lush on the show.
We are. I feel like we've had them on the list for a really long time.
Totally.
And I don't know, it just, I guess like, but we couldn't like think of an angle, or we couldn't like, I don't know, pin them down. We couldn't find their PR. Like, what was it?
I think it was just like, we just never reached out. I guess.
Or that, us being lazy.
I went to a Lush event in October at the Union Square Lush, I believe. Oh. I'm probably, that's not what I mean. Columbus Circle. Nope. What's the one with the arch?
Washington Square Park.
Washington Square Park. It was in Manhattan.
Okay.
At a location.
Got it.
and my friend Courtney, who I met on the Lush trip actually in 2018, oh. Lush flew me out to Vancouver, and I met this lovely girl named Courtney, who we have stayed in touch, and she was back at Lush doing their PR. She invited me. We had some cocktails. It was great. And I was there, and I was like, y'all need to come on the show. I talk about you guys all the time. And lo and behold, we have them today. So we are speaking to Anya Dale, their creative buyer, and Emma Vincent, their perfumer, one of their perfumers, about sort of all things Lush. We yeah. were just as interested in talking to them about their scents as the way that they do their sourcing, because, you know, we know that sustainability is a big buzzword in beauty and fragrance right now, but Lush has really been on that shit for, yeah. it's always been the cornerstone of their business. So as beautiful as our scents are, we also wanted to get into how the scents come to be, how they source things, their ingredients, and all of that. And I'm really happy that we get them both in one episode.
Yeah, hell yeah. So let's just do that.
Let's do it.
Okay. I'm Emma Vincent, and I work as a perfumer at Lush. And today I smell like, it's a bit of a shameless plug, but I smell like turmeric latte, which is our Christmas fragrance. And it's one that I created. So I needed a bit of comfort and warmth today. So that was my prediction.
Hi, my name is Anya Dale. I am a creative buyer for our essential oils, absolutes, resinoids, anything and everything that we use for fragrance creation. And today I smell like junk because I'm just back from Sicily, where I visited our producers for Sicilian lemon and green mandarin oils. And our junk perfume is just that for me. It's a joy in a bottle. It smells of sunshine. So I needed a little bit of a lift me up.
Oh, I love that.
Oh my gosh, I'm so jealous. I don't know if you guys watched The White Lotus, but it's all about Sicily.
Oh, I have to check that one out because I see it referenced everywhere. And I'm like, what is this program that I keep hearing everything
right.
about?
It's all anyone's talking about.
I know. Very hot show right now. But I think it's going to like boost the tourism to Sicily like a lot.
Right. How long have you both been with Lush, just out of curiosity?
Well, I've been there for 23 years.
Oh, wow.
So I
started straight from school. I was a Christmas temp labeling pots and bottles for a long time.
Wow.
We love upward mobility.
Yes. Anya, what about you?
Yeah, for me, it's 4.5, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. It's still a good chunk of time to be your employee.
It is.
I just got my hands on turmeric latte. I was looking forward to it all season. And I have to commend you because that scent slaps. It is certainly my favorite, one of my favorites of the year. I am obsessed with it.
Oh, good. I'm glad you like it. It's definitely one of my favorites as well. And it's been hanging around for quite some time. And we kind of got like a little cult following within Lush.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was saying, you have to release the scent, like it has to come out. And so we suggested it for this year, for this season. And so far, I think, it's been well received. But I think some people say that they feel like it's very similar to a Tom Ford perfume.
Okay.
So I actually had to Google and think like, well, because I originally created it in 2015.
Oh, wow.
So I was just like, well, I created it. I've never smelt the Tom Ford perfume. So mm-hmm. I was like Googling like who created it first. Like, did they? And actually, I think the Tom Ford perfume that people were referencing, that one came before mine. So I'd just like to put it out there that it's not a copy. If you think that it smells quite similar.
Which Tom Ford were people referencing?
I think I think there's a like a tobacco and vanilla type scent.
Oh,
really? I know that one, and I think they're quite different. But
oh, good.
Yeah. On that, I'm going off script already. I'm sorry. On the same turmeric latte tip, Lush does quite a bit with not only like gourmands, but like really spicy, homey scents. I'm thinking cardamom coffee. I'm thinking I'm home are some of my very favorites. Yeah. So I thought like turmeric latte was very much in that family.
Yeah, it's definitely in that family, really sort of warming and comforting. And yeah, I think it's maybe something slightly different from Lush, like the turmeric latte. But, you know, I think the other one is part of that collection that came with cardamom coffee. You had I'm Home.
Mm-hmm.
And that definitely was like a sort of favorite scent that I had as well.
Mm-hmm. It's gorgeous. It's like I've gone back to it for years now. Emma, I guess this first question is over to you. I think when people think of Lush, they think of, you know, bath bombs and maybe body products first. But Sable and I both know you to be one of the most interesting perfumers consistently in the game right now. Can you just give us a rundown of Lush's approach to fragrance for those who might not be familiar?
Yeah, sure. I think that it's quite a wacky approach because there kind of is no approach.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of fine fragrance, when we create, we don't tend to follow any trends. All of us are quite inspired by music. A lot of what we create is an emotion or a feeling that we try to convey within the perfumes. They're very much sort of storytelling. So sometimes we have like a muse for a project or a collection of perfumes that we kind of feel inspiration from. But we're so privileged in that we can create, you know, I can create anything that I want to create that expresses myself and what I want to convey. And then we kind of turn that into either a collection or a show that we do. We kind of do perfume shows. So the recent collection that I did for Florence was obviously inspired by the art and the history and kind of the history of perfumes as well. And we worked alongside a perfume historian. Her name was Rose, and she kind of became the muse of the project. So I'd like to say that there was some kind of formula or way that we approach things, but it kind of, the theme comes kind of later. We recognize that there's something that we're trying to convey, and there becomes like a theme within the perfumes that we're making. And then we kind of build what would be a show or a collection around it.
Mm. Oh, wow. I love that.
That's so cool.
So it's really sort of up to you and whatever your muse is at the time, huh?
Oh, absolutely.
I love that. Anya, on the same sort of tip, when it comes to sort of sourcing, I think Sable and I know Topline much less about that than we do sort of fragrance at large. Do you want to give us a rundown of how Lush's approach to sort of sourcing goes, and maybe as it pertains to sustainability? I realize those are two different questions, but...
Right, yeah. Well, sustainability has been such a buzzword for so many years now, right? I mean, while from our perspective, while sustainability is noble in its own right, in that it's already a step from the exploitation and destruction, the goal of just being sustainable is not really enough. It simply means that you don't have that negative impact on people and the planet. So from Lush perspective, what we are trying to do is to move from this sustaining the status quo and to move the positive dent and focus on the soil health, climate resilience, economic diversification with our farmers that we work with, but also importantly, social impact of our purchases and making sure, measuring the impact that we have on the local communities, making sure that we are not creating damaging situations, making sure that we work in the regenerative way and not just based on the extraction.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So do you guys mostly use essential oils for your scents?
We use a really, really high level of essential oils in our perfumes, hence why, you know, typically if you pick up a perfume at Lush, they're normally quite a darker color. I think you can see that there's a really high level of essential oils and you can kind of smell it, because I think sometimes people say that our approach to perfumery is a little bit like a band on the side that's kind of playing. So nothing's really kind of tight or sophisticated. And I think that's also due to the high level of naturals that we use in there, because they're complex and they change over time. And I think in terms of fine fragrance, so we do use a lot of essential oils. We do use synthetic materials as well. Mm. But I think it's interesting to note that the same level of creativity goes into product perfumery. So it's quite unique for Lush that we create all our own fragrances that go into the products. So it could be that if you're creating a perfume that goes into a product, then you might come at it from a more aromatherapy approach. It might be the benefits that you want to highlight that would be key if it's in skincare or if it's in other applications. Mm-hmm. Then that's also where we use a high level of essential oils as well.
Okay. Wow.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. See, I wasn't aware that you guys also combine synthetics with essential oils. And like my very broad knowledge of how essential oils are used in fragrance is that because they're naturals, they will shift over time and like this, they might smell different in a couple of months. And I always wondered, like, how would you guys plan for that sort of thing? Or do you just kind of like let it evolve as it evolves?
I think we let it evolve as it evolves. I think, you know, as I say, the fragrances will mature over time. They will change slightly. And also, because we use such high levels of essential oils, it could be that we change a source of material because we're working with a project. Maybe we're working with our Nerali growers in the Lebanese. So the fragrance will maybe smell slightly different from time to time because, you know, those naturals are key. But it's interesting to say also that naturals are really complex in their smells. And that's kind of the beauty of it. You can never really replicate that within synthetic materials, but also those synthetic materials can enhance the naturals. So it could be a component that makes up the essential oil. You can boost that with a synthetic ingredient. So yeah, it just depends on the applications as well.
Oh, that's super interesting.
Yeah, that is fascinating.
Can you think of an example where you would boost a natural scent with a synthetic?
Obviously, as I said, there's the same level of creativity goes into our product perfumery. Mm-hmm. So also at Lush, a lot of our products are unpackaged. So if we create a perfume that goes into a bath bomb, we have to be mindful that it has to be strong enough to compete with all the other smells that happen within the store. It has to last for kind of a period of time unpackaged. It's not sat within a packaging that would protect the smell. And also we have to take into account that the essential oils are supercharged, so they contain really potent ingredients. So sometimes you can't use them at really high levels because they can cause, you know, skin irritations. Mm. Sometimes if you want, say, for example, if you were making a rose-based perfume, there's only a certain level that you would be able to use in a product maybe. So you could try and boost the longevity of that essential oil for a longer period of time in a bath bomb or, you know, another unpackaged product that we produce.
Got it.
Okay. Wow.
Sorry, Anya, did I cut you off? Were you going to say something?
I was just actually thinking about the synthetics, yes. And one of the materials where we feel that it is adding value to the fragrances that we produce is we use organic ethanol for all of our fine fragrances as a dilutant, yes, to carry mm-hmm. the essential oils that we use in creation of the perfumes. But also we use organic ethanol in many of the body sprays. And we source it from Brazil, where it's organic, it's rich in biodiversity. Our supplier abandons the infamous and horrible practice of the slash and burn over 30 years ago. And this ingredient is linked to circularity, where everything is used in and reprocessed to create the energy to supply to the local households. It's carbon neutral as well. So, and not all of the synthetics are bad synthetics.
That's fascinating. We talk a lot about naturals versus synthetics on the show and sort of in fragrance. And we know that some people have, you know, very polarizing feelings about synthetics. So it's interesting to hear a brand like Lush, who does work so much in naturals, actually come and say, like, not all synthetics are bad.
Yeah.
Heads up.
It depends how you use them, and it depends where you source them. It requires a lot of the attention to the sources.
Okay.
Okay.
Wow.
That's really interesting.
That is very.
What sort of things does Lush look for when they're sourcing for synthetics?
It's actually very similar to what we are looking at when we are sourcing naturals as well. It's that question that keeps us awake. Yeah? Well, how do we lead from, like, with responsibility in sourcing? How do we make the positive impact, and how can it look like? So, for example, we travel a lot to meet with our farmers, with the producers, and to see the effects on their livelihoods and how we can incorporate the fair pay and fair trade in our sourcing, but also actually visiting our producers and discussing with them how we use the materials, how it wouldn't be just possible without all of the work that they're doing at the origin. It's a main reason why we wanted to work directly with farmers in the first place, because we always were very happy to pay the premium for the materials, but we wanted this premium to be with farmers, not the middleman. So we look at the transparency with our sources and at the work that they are doing, what social impact they're having, what the education is look like, what the water usage is looking like. There are a lot of the considerations. And one of the first and main one for us still is we are committed to not have any of our materials or ingredients tested on the animals. And that is not only for a singular ingredient. It is actually a company-wide policy. So it can be restriction as well, but it's such a vital work that we do. And it's brilliant to see that so many more take the same approach, I would say, as we do when it comes to the animal testing and protests and offering alternatives.
Wow.
That sounds very extensive.
Yeah, it does. I'm looking at the questions that we sent you and only now realizing I'm sort of asking the same thing three different ways. So I apologize for that. Love to be a professional. But I think the question I was sort of like trying to land the plane on is, when you have your core collection of X amount of fragrances in store and online. How do you keep that, you know, replenished and available to the consumer when I'm sure that the, you know, natural ingredients aren't always available in the same quantities? Do you ever find yourselves having to source and include maybe a different ingredient in the fragrances to get them to smell true to the idea and true to the consumer? Or would you ever pull a fragrance if, say, like a rose, which I'm sure is a bad example, is not available? So I guess the question is, how does ingredient availability inform your core collection?
I think in terms of ingredients, there are, especially where we're at right now with climate change, etc., we are probably more at risk than a lot of companies because we are so heavily reliant on natural materials. So when there's hurricanes in the West Indies and it wipes out all of the bay oil, it's not just the fragrances, it affects the products as well. So we either try to look for alternative sources. So, you know, could we find this type of material that's grown somewhere else? Or, you know, but this normally if, you know, a particular material was kind of wiped out a little bit, so to speak, then there's a panic on the market anyway. Everyone is trying to get this material. So then the prices, you know, fluctuate massively. You might get material, but it's heavily adulterated with other materials as well. So we're very strict in terms of quality control. So there's a level of reformulation that we would do if we needed to, if required. I think the worst case scenario would be that we could always choose to discontinue a product if we needed to. Obviously, it's not ideal. And I think we've been very fortunate somehow that we've managed to negotiate our way and never really had examples, at least for perfumes, where we've had to, you know, remove them from sale or do like really extensive reformulation. I think we're quite lucky in that respect, but we do have to do reformulations when it comes to regulations. So we're kind of, as we're a global brand, we're governed by various restrictions and regulations. So it could be that a particular material is now banned within Europe. So then we have to go back in and try to reformulate. It can be quite tricky. It's not a simple, straightforward process. But I think there's also almost like an understanding from the customer that there will either be a slight variation to your perfume, or if it's not quite how it was, if we've had to reformulate for regulatory reasons, I think that we can convey why that's happened. And actually, the safety is at the forefront of our mind when it comes to the customer. So if it's an ingredient that's now suddenly completely banned, well, we don't want to use it anyway. So if it means that we have to switch the fragrance around a little bit or discontinue it, then obviously the safety comes at the forefront.
Sure.
For sure. I think in the past 3 years alone, everyone's I've been very frustrated with supply chain issues and, you know, with climate change, the fact that natural resources are being wiped out or diverted, it can affect something even like perfume that you wouldn't imagine that, like, oh, a hurricane in the West Indies happened and now I can't have the perfume I love.
Right.
But it's a teachable moment about how everything affects everything, really.
Yeah.
It is, but I think, you know, other perfume houses, they kind of probably get by because for the maybe the vast majority, the levels of naturals are so low in the perfume that the synthetic market is definitely a bit more stable. Not always, there's always kind of issues, but even, you know, if you had a fragrance that your mom used to wear when you were little and you have this kind of memory of it, and if they still sell it today in the store, it will smell nothing like that original.
Completely, yeah.
Right.
But that's all regulatory stuff, right? That's the stuff that the perfume houses are having to contend with. It's never the same as it was. And it's literally just, you know, the more information that we find out and the more regulations that come into play, the perfumers have to be on their toes and try to look for alternatives or different ways to try and make it as smell as close to the original as they can.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that.
I would assume that there's also sort of knowing what we know about the Lush customer. It's sort of like you never just have one Lush product. You have 10.
Oh, wow.
There's like a level of literacy in why they're shopping there and the way that they're shopping and interacting with the brand. So I would assume that if you pull a product and give them the reasons, that's not going to drive them away from the store because they're there for that reason. Exactly. Yeah. Like part of their experience with Lush is being good to the environment and having, you know, more of a trackable intention with sustainability and the like. So were you to have to pull something or discontinue something, I feel like the customer would almost appreciate that and then just find a Lush alternative for what they were already using.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's definitely the case because you like to think that Lush is quite a personable brand and there's so much that we do. It's really hard to kind of convey our messages and get all this information out there. You know, we're a campaigning brand. We're all of this stuff and a lot of maybe what you might, if you go to maybe Sephora or anywhere, it's all faceless, right? It's all the same sort of packaging. It's all product that kind of sits on the shelves or out in the storerooms for like 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. We try to, you know, our products are handmade. It's fresh ingredients. That's why there's like a limited shelf life on them. And we really understand kind of what goes in them. And we understand the processes and we meet the people that grow the stuff. So it's very easy for us to try and explain to our customers the reason why their beloved product has disappeared. And they're kind of okay with that. I think because it feels much more personable. If your favorite brand from another store, you know, suddenly you couldn't get it anymore, you know, there might be an official company response, but it might not necessarily tell you the whole truth. We try to be very transparent in what we're doing and why we're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember I don't know if you guys still do this, but you used to put like stickers with people's faces on the products of like, this was packed by like so-and-so.
Yeah. We still do that. Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, we do that. And also like when the staff go into the shop. So if you're in the factory making the products, it's like a proud moment to take your family into the store and say, look, I made this. I made this cream. That's my face on this pot of product. And it's trying to embody like this feeling of pride within the company, within the staff. It's kind of like, I think Mark Constantine likened it to like, oh, look, mom and dad, look what I'm doing here. Or, you know, and just make it a bit more personal. This actual person has put this cream together for you. It's not, you know, robotics in a factory somewhere.
Right, right. I was lucky enough to go on a Lush press trip probably 5 years ago at this point, maybe four. And we toured the factory. And I can say from seeing it firsthand, that shit is really done by hand. Like, I felt like I was in a grocery store. I remember there were just like buckets of roses and like buckets of like, I don't know, rosemary or whatever the ingredients were that we were using. And I remember we were able to take the petals off the roses by hand, and I'm sure for a bath bomb or something, but it was all so much more handmade than I even expected. It was really weird, like crazy to see.
Yeah, it's quite crazy to sort of keep up with because we're such a big brand as well, you know, and we really do put the stuff in that we say we have put in. Which I think people kind of don't realize sometimes. And it feels a little bit like a Willy Wonka factory, depending on where you know, people like rolling bubble bars and, you know, they are rolling it by hand. They are getting the swirls in this bubble bar by hand. Mm-hmm. And especially at Christmas time, it is a bit of a Willy Wonka fest.
I love that.
Going back to what you said earlier about how creating your fragrances is a bit like being in a band, which I love that analogy. And I love the descriptions on the website and on the cartons and the names. And I always wonder, do the names come first and then the scent, or does the scent come first and then you kind of like name it together based on like what you associate it with?
I think for me, when I create a perfume, I always write down the name, you know, and that's probably different from how Mark approaches it and Simon when he worked with us, which is Mark Constantine's son. They probably approach it in a different way. It's quite an introverted process, so we don't necessarily openly discuss what we kind of do. But I always aim to have a name, and then I try to build the perfume around that because that is the core of what I want to say or a message that I want to convey. And then if I write it down on paper, I know that, you know, that is what I'm going for. But ultimately, sometimes I think an example of that would be with the Florence collection. I created a perfume and I named it the Florentine Blonde. And the inspiration was these affluent women that would be in these, you know, in the Medici houses who would have this kind of vintage smelling scent. They would be openly smoking, et cetera, et cetera. And then there was like a buzz at that time for the women because the women had darker hair color and they were all trying to dye their hair blonde. And I was trying to represent the opulence of these women in the houses, but also represent the women that were at home in their apartments shut away. And, you know, and I imagined that they were kind of smoking off the balcony. So I made sure that I had tobacco in there and I made sure there was iris because that was the symbol of Florence. So you kind of build your own story. So I was desperate to call it the Florentine Blonde because that was the inspiration. But then when we got together and we were smelling things together, Mark said, oh, the name is too long. Now, when we try to name fragrances, we try to think of it in like one word with it, you know, not two or three because it becomes a bit complicated. So for example, Anya's wearing Junk, you know, so this particular fragrance was called Sappho, which we then turned it into the, so she was the kind of goddess, so to speak, of lesbianism. And then he was like, are you comfortable with that? And I was like, yeah, no, I'm absolutely comfortable with that. That's not a problem. But then it kind of represented these women in a different way. So yeah, so I don't, sometimes he likes to sort of change the names in the end, but just to have like a real strong impact with the name that we have. Mm-hmm. But from, you know, at the beginning, I like to start with a name for the concept.
I like that a lot.
That's really cool. The image that you conjured with the Florentine Blondes. That actually sounds like a really good cocktail name.
Yeah.
And like, it's such a specific image, right? That where do you draw that from? And are you allowed to kind of just like riff creatively however you see fit?
Yeah, great question.
Oh yeah, I absolutely creatively as however I want to do it. I think this actual particular reference was on the back of a flyer and it was in Florence. They were about to have an exhibition for Leonardo da Vinci, and he was not only a sculptor, an artist, he also created cosmetic and he did so many other things. And on the back of this flyer, so it was kind of advertising that, and he referenced the Florentine Blonde. So I just took that as, okay, this is the name of it. This is what I'm going to call it. And then how can I build a story around that? And what ingredients can I use to kind of build what I want that to be?
That's so cool.
That's so cool. Mm. Not to completely spin out, but since we're talking about names and the fragrances they represent, can I just ask about, I think it's Superworld Unknown. I've been really obsessed with that this fall, and I believe it's seasonal. I could be wrong, but the name is so cool and the fragrance is so cool and interesting to me. Can you just tell us about the inspiration for that?
I think particularly at that time, I might have been on maternity leave when they released that collection of perfumes, but I'm pretty sure that it was inspired by the book called The Night Circus. Mm. I seem to remember there was like a carnival feel. And I think particularly in that perfume, there was candy floss oil. Mm-hmm. And that is definitely one of my favorites because it's quite, I've never smelled anything like it. Mm-hmm. I think there's fennel in there. And it's kind of ingredients that you wouldn't think would go together, mm-hmm. but it makes something really interesting. That's why it's so great to be able to experiment and just put clashing ingredients together and see what happens. But I'm almost positive. I know that Simon and Mark, because I think Simon created that fragrance, and I know that they were really inspired by the Night Circus book. So they probably used some of that as inspiration.
That's fascinating. I've been really enjoying that all season. This, I think, relates to fragrance as much as it does formula. So it's, I'm sure, to both of you. But Emma, earlier in the episode, you said you had to take into consideration the experience that the consumer has with the scent, not only as they're using it in the tub or on their bodies, but at the counter when they're buying it. And it has to smell the same and strong enough when they're purchasing it as it does at home. And I think that experiential part of actually selling the fragrance as much as using it is really fascinating to me. So can you talk about, take a, you know, an iconic Lush scent like Rose Jam and franchising that out from its original form to, you know, a bath bomb, a body product, a body spray, and a fine fragrance? How do you stay true to the original fragrance in all of these different forms? Like, are there different things to take into consideration and different concentrations between products that still give you the same fragrance?
Yeah, actually, I'm pretty sure that Rose Jams originally started life as a gourmet soap. Mm-hmm. So actually, it didn't begin its life as a perfume. It began its life in a product. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure. So that perfume in particular, yeah, goes into a large variety of products, some that aren't specifically named Rose Jam either. Mm-hmm. So there's a bath bomb called Black Rose, and that is Rose Jam scented. So I think it depends on the application. So I know that maybe for the solid perfume, we have to understand that it goes into, you know, like a butter oil base. Mm-hmm. So in there, we would have to have it at a much higher concentration. But effectively, there is little to no variation between that fragrance and the various applications that it's used in the bath bomb. There was or is a bubble bar, the perfume. It is kind of the same. And sometimes that causes headaches at Lush because, you know, it's quite costly. And to put into a product, you know, and to put it into a fragrance as well, we have a lot of headaches with finance because, you know, they kind of think like, well, it's a bath bomb and it's kind of going in the water and it's going down the drain, you know, whereas a perfume is a bit more special. You'd use it for a longer time. And we say, no, like, we want people to have that same experience. They need to have that same perfume.
Yeah.
But obviously, because it's used in different ways, in a bath bomb, in a solid perfume, in a shower gel, it will smell slightly different because there's different base materials that it will be used in. Like, obviously, shower gel is surfactant, bath bomb is bicarbonate citric. So it will smell different, but it is virtually the same fragrance in the whole line, in the whole range.
Okay, that's fascinating. Wow. I think one last question for both of you. And Anya, you mentioned at the beginning of this episode how sustainability is such a buzzword and such a talking point across all of these brands, but Lush has and has always had a very measurable approach to sustainability, and it's always been a cornerstone of the brand. So now that terms like clean, organic, and sustainable are such big terms in the industry, has Lush had to adapt to, you know, everyone entering the lane that they've always been in? And if so, how?
Oh, that's such a good question. I would say that we continue to lead from the collaborative point, and Lush has always been grounded in the environmental responsibility from day one. But I definitely see that having sustainable practices in place is no longer a nice to have or something that company can just say that, well, we have one project. It's an expectation. Consumers expect to have sustainability as a minimum and often going far beyond that as well. So for us, what we are doing is that we are making a much bigger focus on the traceability of all of our ingredients from farm to final product. Mm-hmm. And we are achieving it with concentration on the regenerative agriculture. So enriching the soils, really starting from minimal till practices, view on the pesticides use, yeah, fair pay projects at source. How can we empower female farmers and female business owners, mm-hmm. working on the traceability for some of the more challenging ingredients? Certification, of course. And then additionally, there is no such thing and no such concept as waste in nature. So circularity of ingredients we use. So in the beginning, I mentioned the green mandarin, and green mandarin is one of those ingredients. So farmers in Sicily, they pick them off the trees. Up to 70% of the green mandarins are wasted, mm-hmm. because a lot of the citrus goes for the fresh fruit market, and consumers want this perfect fruit on the supermarket shelves. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the perfectly fine fruit is just wasted. So instead of that, we create this essential oil that we use in our fragrances. Again, adding value and adding another cash really stream for the farmers as well, because working with naturals, it's difficult. You are relying on that one crop a year, So all of the year, you are just working and hoping for no weather disasters. You're hoping for the good crop. You're hoping for the good yield. And if you can diversify that as much as possible at the source, you are winning. So for us, staying ahead means that we are staying true to ourselves, that we are digging even deeper into the regeneration, and that we continue questioning ourselves of like, what can we do better? Where can we improve?
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It really is a shame how much good fruit and vegetables go to waste because we're body shaming them. It's very unfortunate.
I love that body shaming the fruit. Oh.
Yeah. But it's true. There's a produce service in here in New York. I think it's called like Ugly Produce or something.
Like that, yeah.
And they'll just mail you boxes of like oddly shaped produce that are perfectly fine, but they're just rejects from the grocery store.
That's because like they your look dream.
Yeah, we have a similar thing in the UK. I think we call it like wonky veg or something.
Oh, that's cute.
I love that.
Yeah, I love wonky.
Yeah.
I have one more question that I just thought of because I am relatively new to Luscious fragrance compared to Tynan, but are there any particular runaway bestseller hits of fragrances that you've created that kind of got really popular unexpectedly?
Yeah, I think the predominant market for us in terms of sales of perfume is actually Korea.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a huge market for us there. And you'll find that people in different areas of the world have particular kind of bestsellers. So like in the UK, one of our bestsellers is Karma. That can be found across a lot of product ranges as well. It's normally slightly different in North America. We have a seasonal fragrance called Lord of Misrule. That seems to be more popular there. But in Japan and Korea, actually, less so Korea, but in Japan, a lot of our really kind of out there scents like Lust, which is this hugely indolic, in your face, jasmine perfume. It's bright red. It stains your clothes when you spray it on you. Yep. And you think culturally that people in Japan, because obviously we work close with them, we have factories there, et cetera, and shops. Culturally, you think that they are much more subdued and they don't want to offend anyone with any strong fragrances. So you would think that a brand like Lush to be so popular there and these particular perfumes to sell so well is kind of mind-blowing. So it was quite funny that there's a few scents that I have created. And if you look at kind of our UK sales, they're probably, you know, mid-table or somewhere lower. But in Korea, like the majority of the fragrances that I've created in the last few years are really up there. Cause I kind of joke, like, I think I need to move to Korea. Like, they have stuff there. Let's go in the UK. I think I need to take a plane and start a life in Korea. Yeah. So there's a couple. There was one like Fresh As we did last year for Christmas. And I think that's one of their best selling perfumes. Shade. I did one called Shade, Salty. And they're not typically what I think that they would like, but they love it. And I think with Turmeric Latte, I looked at our global sales. So we kind of have a breakdown and stuff. And in the UK, Turmeric Latte was doing okay. And then I looked and it popped up as like the second best-selling global perfume that we sold in November, just for November. And I was like, wow. Like everyone in Korea must be really selling the shit out of it to make second in the league. Like, you know, I'm waiting to hold on to that so I can boast about Mark. He was like on the fence about putting it out there. I was like, no, we've got like a little bit of an internal following, like the staff like it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was really chuffed to see that.
That's so interesting. I have a theory that if you put the word latte in any scent, it will sell like gangbusters. Yes. I think people just love like a soothing beverage in a fragrance.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. So that's what we need at this time. But obviously, you know, we sell products in Australia. I mean, they don't necessarily need the turmeric latte. We have to be mindful when we create things, especially, you know, like we're about to start our Christmas products for next year. And we have to be mindful that it can't all be these gourmand type scents. Like we have to have some lighter citrusy stuff for the Asian markets or Australia, because it's like that's not really their season.
Right. Oh, right. Sure.
Southern hemisphere. Sure. Opposite time.
Good point.
Yeah. Anyway, that must be a really fun job to like be a perfumer for a brand that's just like go wild. Do whatever you want.
To have.
That's so cool.
Essentially, like full creative control. Oh, yeah. Fuck. You know what? I wanted to ask her. She said she's had turmeric latte ready to go since like 2015.
Oh, whoa. I think that was like two. That was before its time. Like people weren't onto the turmeric.
Completely.
They weren't on the turmeric tip yet.
I wonder like how often that. I should have fucking asked her. She was just on the call. you know, how often that happens when you have essentially a fragrance done and dusted, but it's just like sort of sitting back waiting for the right time. Mm. You know, obviously there's no better time for that to hit than right now, but it's sort of like, so what else you got? Like, what else are you keeping from us? Or,
well, what's interesting too is like, I guess like they could have launched it then and then maybe it would have grown in popularity. Mm-hmm. Like that happens to some fragrances where they've been around, but then for some reason, like, I hate that I'm referencing this once again, but like Baccarat Rouge, like that was around. Nobody cared until semi-recently and then it blew up. Yeah. Why? I don't know, but they could just do that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's wild.
I do really think that if you just put latte in a name, people all over it. All over it.
Yep.
Like make a fragrance called Oat Latte, all over
it. Done.
I'm sure that already exists. Mm-hmm. And if it does, please tell me because I would like to smell it.
Yeah, I would like to wear that.
Yeah. I think of a Replica Matcha Meditation, which doesn't have the word latte in it, but it has the word matcha in it, which is also just as powerful.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also wonder like, how many collections are either like one ready to go or two coming together, you know, throughout the years until it makes sense to go out with.
Yeah.
You know?
Hmm. That's also kind of cool how she was like, I was an intern and now I'm the perfumer. So sick. Like, wait, what? What is the pipeline?
Right. The sourcing of it all too. So like interesting cool to hear. Job. Yeah, completely.
I would love that job.
Just like, oh, it's just in Sicily for work.
Yeah, I know. She's like, super casual.
How can looking at these ugly ass
green mandarins that nobody wants.
Right. These ugly fruits.
These ugly fruits.
God.
Aw, leave the fruits alone.
I'm so happy we finally got to connect with them. I feel like, I mean, yes, obviously all the questions I had were answered, but just being able to get more insight into how one of my favorite perfume brands like moves and maneuvers is so gratifying.
Yeah, you turned me on to their fragrances. I mean, like, I was always aware of them. I feel like in the XO days, like people were all about Lush.
I agree.
For a time. Mm-hmm. It was weird. I feel like amongst the XO crowd, there were like certain brands that for a time everybody gravitated towards. There was Lush, Mario Badescu,
OCC Cosmetics.
Oh my God. Oh my Lip God. Tar.
Remember when we all pretended to like Lip Tar?
Ugh. What happened to them?
They suck.
Yeah, they
like I think that like just better that shit was, like, came along.
The pre-liquid, like right on the cusp of the liquid lipstick days when they were still shitty.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. God, what those an era.
Awful.
They were not good. And they like stained your teeth.
Yeah.
It was weird.
But never dried down.
Well, that's why. They would just bleed all over your face.
To everything but your lips.
Kind of.
You know?
If you had like any lines around your mouth, it would just like bleed into it.
Also, I feel like Lime Crime.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then her whole Nazi thing happened.
Turns out she's a Nazi.
Oops.
I know that like she's long gone and they've been taken over by other people, but like every time they picture me, I'm like, go away. Like,
it's kind of just like change the name. Just like you don't have the leverage of the name anymore. Right. Just change it.
Right.
Lime crime in this economy?
Crime?
A crime in this economy? Let's call it like legal lemon or something.
God.
Lemon law. The antithesis to lime crime.
ACAP includes lemon law. Anyway.
I'm going to use that. I'm going to trademark that. Lemon law. Anyway.
Yeah, thank you to Lush for coming out. This was really, really great to finally connect with you guys. And I am so excited to edit this episode.
Me too. Everybody have a happy and safe New Year's.
Yes.
Eve.
Don't drink and drive.
Tell me if you kiss anybody and rate the kiss in our voice note. Leave us a hotline voice message.
Actually do that, yeah.
Yeah, about how you smelled on New Year's Eve. Or whoever you kissed and what they smelled like.
I was going to say, like, if you're going to do drugs, test them before. And you're like, tell us who you kiss.
Wait, how do you test drugs before you do that?
You test for fentanyl.
Oh, yeah, do that too. Carry Narcon.
Yeah, carry Narcon. Yeah. And most importantly, have a great time.
Also that, don't die, have a great time.
Yes.
That's
yes.
the smelly later way.
Yes, please come back to us happy and healthy in the new year.
Hell yeah.
And until then.
Until then.
You can hit our website where you can look at our soft, gorgeous, luxurious merch. From there, you can also leave us a voice note, which we love. You can find me at, is that all I need to plug?
You didn't say what the website was, which is smellulator.live.
You're going to have to figure it out for yourself, girls.
Just Google it.
Smellulator.live is the URL. Leave us 5 stars and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow me at Tynan Buck.
I'm at Sable Tooth Tigra.
And until next time, we will smell you later.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are 2/4 of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in 4 dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.